Hello and welcome. I think you'll find this to be a really fascinating follow-up on cold fusion, low-energy nuclear reactions, and an interview that I recently had with Gonzalo Lira, who I really admire Gonzalo's courage and truth-telling and intellect, and we had a great time. I was hosting the Alex Jones Show last Friday when Alex was scheduled for a court date that morning to testify in his own trial in Austin, Texas. And on that date, the jury, I think they're deciding the punitive damages, you know, that Alex is going to have to pay. But then for some reason, the judge barred Alex from being able to testify at his own trial, which is a gross injustice, but all kinds of railroading of Alex Jones going on there. But anyway, Alex was back in the studio, even though it was expected that he was not going to be in the studio. And yet Alex was gracious enough to allow me to continue my scheduled interview with Gonzalo Lira, which I had set up for, I don't know, like 10 days or something, or maybe a little more. It's kind of hard to track down Gonzalo. And Gonzalo was gracious enough to agree to go ahead and do that interview and then stay an extended period of time. So I was able to have Gonzalo on, I think, for more than an hour. It was almost, well, an hour and a half, I suppose. And so I got the privilege of being able to have a great conversation with Gonzalo about so many different topics. And, you know, we talked about the collapse of Western Europe. We talked about energy and politics and the war between Russia and Ukraine. We talked about China and Taiwan and so on. And what came out in the interview, well, I should add, and then at the very end, and this was not my intention, I wasn't trying to spring this on Gonzalo in any way, but I'd wanted to mention this sometime during the day, that there's a technology called low-energy nuclear reactions that is becoming very much verified in certain sectors of the scientific community. And there's now a public demonstration that has taken place of this. Really, it's a solid state fusion technology by a company known as Brillouin that produces some excess heat while undergoing a little understood but very minuscule fusion reaction. And so I had I brought this up with Gonzalo as the guest on the show, thinking that, hey, this could be relevant to what Western Europe is going through. Western Europe is short on energy, and how are they going to heat their buildings this winter in Berlin, let's say? Or, you know, how are we going to transition off of fossil fuels as the West wants to do when green energy is not yet all the way there, right? Like the solar panels and the wind farms, they're not going to cover everything. Hence the need for natural gas, you know, hence the need for Russia's exports and Gazprom and the Nord Stream 1 pipeline, which I jokingly refer to as Doom Stream 1, because it's currently 90% doom and 10% gas. But in any case, I kind of like sprang this question on Gonzalo, and that's my fault. I apologize for that. He wasn't really on to talk about this subject. And when I mentioned this and said, hey, Gonzalo, what, you know, what's your reaction to this low-energy nuclear reactions? And his reaction was that, oh, the whole thing's a scam. It's a complete fraud, a total scam. I don't buy it. I don't believe it. That was his reaction, which is a little bit surprising to me. But this is what I love about Gonzalo, is that he is going to communicate what he believes without compromise. He's going to tell you, in a blunt manner, you know, he's not going to beat around the bush. And this is something valuable to know about people, that you know they're not going to BS you. You know that if they disagree, they're going to say so, but not in a rude or crude or combative manner. And nothing like that went down. It was Gonzalo saying, hey, I think this is a fraud. And me saying, well, that's interesting because I'm seeing that this is, you know, being demonstrated and validated and so on. And this could have some real potential for the world. And, you know, Gonzalo repeating that he didn't think there was anything to it and that Time magazine got scammed in 1989 and so on. So I just wanted to follow up with that conversation here. But first, to thank Gonzalo for, you know, responding and being polite and very gracious and very intelligent, and simply, you know, it's good to know people who you can count on to speak the truth as they see it. In fact, if more people like that existed in our world, we wouldn't have half the problems we have today. And what was beautiful about that exchange was that the world was seeing, you know, real journalism. And this was a real conversation live, streamed live on air between myself and Gonzalo, and there was no pre-planning. There was no pre-vetting of it. I had not talked to him about that topic, or frankly, almost any topic beforehand. I did not know how he was going to react, and his reaction surprised me. But you see, that's what journalism should consist of, I think, with more frequency, is guests that aren't always on the same page about different things. And that's normal, because people have different life experiences. People have different knowledge sets and different areas of expertise, obviously. So this is why you tend to want to invite experts on to talk about subjects of great importance, right? You want an expert in energy to talk about energy. You want an expert in Ukraine to talk about Ukraine and Russia. And that's really why I invited Gonzalo on, because he lives there and he's been very close to that topic for quite a long time. But none of us can be experts in everything. And so each of us, yourself included, you listening to this, each of us can always learn something more. And what Gonzalo said was so important. He said that he is always open to revising his conclusions based on new information. And you see, that's, I love him for saying that. If only everybody in the world could follow that kind of principle and just be okay with new information, be okay to change our positions over time. And, you know, I experienced the same thing when the early COVID outbreak was happening. And at first, you know, I was very concerned and originally convinced that this was an actual super deadly viral pandemic. But as the evidence came in slowly, it became apparent that wasn't the case, that the virus itself wasn't so deadly after all, that most people were surviving it. And so, you know, I had to publicly change my position and apologize for not seeing it sooner and so on. And that's okay. And that's a normal part of the process. And if we could all just leave our egos out of it, if that's, I'm not sure that's really possible, but if we could maybe at least suppress the egos a little bit and just say, hey, it's okay to be wrong from time to time, or it's okay to have new information come in, that's okay too. Now, on the issue of low energy nuclear reactions and cold fusion, I do want to share with you what I've come to know that, you know, honestly, many other people may not yet be aware of what has been validated in this area of science recently, because it's quite fascinating, and it is really a global game changer. And I'm absolutely convinced that low energy nuclear reactions are happening, and they are easily replicated, and systems exist now to carry on this reaction, whatever it is. It's not a chemical reaction. It's something complex that's not yet fully understood by conventional scientists. And that's actually part of the problem, is that there's not a good theory yet to explain how this is working. So what I know is that this is solid state. In other words, there are no moving parts. And yet there is, well, because of the composition of the materials that go into this, I guess it's an anode, as it's called, because of the composition and the microscopic fissures in it and some of the catalyst elements that this is made out of, it causes, for some reason that we don't yet understand, it causes a very microscopic, a very tiny amount of solid state fusion at room temperature. Not a lot, very little in fact, but because of the equation of energy equals mc squared, you know, E equals mc squared, it only takes a very tiny amount of fusion of hydrogen, by the way, very tiny amount, to produce excess heat energy as the byproduct. Now, of course, helium is a byproduct as well. But there's also excess heat energy, which is the whole point of this system, that it produces excess heat. And I have seen the testimonies and interviews with numerous scientists and analysts and some investors who are involved in this technology. And there are some pretty big names involved in this. I don't know if I'm yet at liberty to say who, but I'll just say there's one person who's part of the, we'll just say the Google family that is involved in this. The people at Google know this is real. The United States Navy knows this is real. Science labs in Japan, they know this is real. Russia, they know it's real, and so on. If you're sufficiently informed, it's no longer a debate of whether this is happening. This is a natural phenomenon. It's not supernatural. It doesn't violate the laws of physics. It's entirely consistent with the laws of physics. You know, E equals MC squared. You lose a little bit of mass. You get a little bit of fusion. You get a lot of excess heat. Well, I should say some excess heat. And it is reproducible, and it is measurable, and it is validated through numerous scientific validations that are very precise. The question is, the real question, well, I guess there are two. The first question is, what's the theory that explains this? Because, you know, standard model atomic physics does not explain this. And that's where everybody gets kind of thrown out of whack on this, is that you can't explain this phenomenon with the standard model of, you know, subatomic physics or even just, you know, atomic physics. I mean, we don't need to talk about quarks, I don't think, or muons or whatever, but just straight physics cannot explain this. So in effect, we can't blame Gonzalo Lira for saying that the whole thing is bunk, because frankly, according to the current understanding of physics, this phenomenon is impossible. In other words, this is one of those rare cases where you say, well, if this were to be true, they would have to rewrite the laws of physics. And in this case, I'm going to say that's exactly what has to be done and is going to be done. In fact, it's being done. There are teams of scientists right now that I'm aware of that are trying to develop the theories before they go public with this whole thing so that there is some plausible explanation for what's happening. Now, there's no debate of the phenomenon itself. This is happening. The excess heat is being created. The only question is, how do we explain it? And this is where I like to remind people about the difference between the map and the terrain. So, you know, we have laws of physics, but they're not laws, are they? Not really. They're models. They're human models that attempt to explain what's happening in physics. But the models are not the real world. Physics operates on its own systems of cause and effect. You know, I mean, you've got atomic phenomena, you've got subatomic, quote, particles, which aren't even particles, you know, you've got electron probability clouds, you've got, I don't know, string theory, M theory, quantum theory, all kinds of stuff that frankly sounds pretty crazy. What did physicist Richard Feynman say about quantum theory? He said, anybody who claims to understand it is lying. it's beyond human comprehension how quantum theory is working. And you know, we have in the United States, the NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, they have quantum computers that work. I think the most recent quantum computer was, what, 4 qubits or 16 or something? And then there's a company, it might have been related to Google, about a year ago announced they had, what was it, like a 64-bit functioning quantum computer, which seemed unbelievable, but frankly, even a 4-bit quantum computer seems unbelievable because it seems to violate the laws of cause and effect, and physics and reality and everything else. But that's when I once again remind people, our laws are just models and they don't override reality. Reality functions the way it wants to. I mean, God's laws are in place, or cosmic laws that supersede our understanding. And all we can do as human beings is little by little hope to glean clues about how things work. And then we try to organize our information. We try to structure it in a way that makes sense. And that's how the Table of Elements came about. But the Table of Elements is a human creation. The elements themselves have been around for billions of years. I mean, over what's the age of our universe? Like 13, 14 billion years or something on that scale? The elements have been around the whole time. Our Table of Elements is like 150 years old. So obviously the elements existed before the Table of Elements. So the great failure of modern science and modern physics or chemistry or medicine or what have you, the great failure is when people believe that their models are reality and they come to the conclusion when looking at something that, well, if our models can't explain it or quantify it, then it couldn't be real. And that's what we're seeing with low-energy nuclear reactions, or LENR / cold fusion. We're seeing the physics community say, well, that can't possibly be happening. Why? Because our models don't have a way to explain that. Therefore, it's not real. Except in the lab, it is real. It's a real phenomena. It's actually happening. And it's measured and confirmed and validated through multiple labs all around the world. There's excess heat and a little bit of excess helium. There is some sort of fusion taking place in a solid state system with no moving parts at room temperature. I know it's mind blowing, but it is happening. We just don't have the physics to describe it. Not yet. But the thing about human models is they always, well, they evolve over time. They expand as our knowledge expands. So of course, our understanding of physics today is very different from classic Newtonian physics from centuries ago. The world is not made of billiard balls bouncing off each other, although the laws of motion and momentum are still very much in play, but not at a quantum level. So now we have to have all kinds of new physics and new models and, quote, laws to explain what happens at the quantum level or the subatomic level. And none of that's Newtonian at all, is it? So my invitation to people like Gonzalo Lira, and it's a polite invitation. It's a genuine, good faith invitation, and others in the people in the science community, people who are physicists and so on, is to say, wouldn't it be interesting to look at the data of excess heat creation, and then start to ponder, could our models be expanded to incorporate some phenomenon that is clearly taking place? Because, you see, in summary, cold fusion, or again, LENR, L-E-N-R, it does not violate physics. It does not violate the cosmic reality of physics. Yes, it violates humans' models of physics. But as I've said here, those models do not describe all of reality. So cold fusion is, in fact, consistent with the structure of the universe and how matter exists and interacts. And it is, in fact, completely aligned with the great cosmos, whatever laws drive the cosmos, which we don't yet fully understand. It is consistent with that. If it were not consistent with that, then there wouldn't be any excess heat. And it would be like, oh, here's a lump of room temperature water. Pretty boring. Nothing happening. But something is happening. It's just something we can't explain. But think of the example of quantum computing. The superposition of quantum states in qubits. You know, normally in a binary computer system, you have 8 bits. I mean, obviously talking about 8-bit system. So each of the bits can only hold 1 or 0, but not both values at the same time. So at any given moment in time, 8 bits can represent a total value of anywhere from 0 to 255. And 16 bits can represent, what is it, 0 to 65535, I believe. You know, 2 to the power of 8 minus 1. So that's a standard computing system. Binary system can only hold one value at a time. But a quantum computer using qubits can hold all of those values at the same time. In other words, an 8-qubit computer can hold all the values from 0 to 255 simultaneously. And you're like, how can that happen? How can that be? That seems to violate logic. And yes, it does. It violates, like Feynman said, anybody who claims to understand it doesn't know what they're talking about. Yes, it seems to violate logic. But that's not even the weird part. You know what quantum computers are good at doing? Factoring large prime numbers. And you know how they factor large prime numbers? Through factorization algorithms that on a traditional computer would take literally billions of years. How does a quantum computer do it? Well, the best explanation that I've heard from experts in quantum computing is that first they set the state in the qubits to represent the large product of two prime numbers. Remember, we're talking about a very large number that is created through the multiplication of two prime numbers. And so in order to derive the original prime numbers, you have to factor that very large number by discovering the two primes that went into it, right? So on a traditional computer, that might take billions of years. On a quantum computer, that can happen in a split second. And how? How does that happen? Well, according to the experts, the large number is sent to a large number of alternate universes. In fact, 2 to the power of however many bits you have, universes. So if you're factoring a 16-bit number, that number is, quote, sent out to 65,536 unique universes. And then the quantum computer pulls out of that universe the correct answer almost instantly. And you say, how can that be? That seems to violate logic and reason and cause and effect. And again, same answer. Yes, it does. But it works. It works. I mean, they're building quantum computers. They have successfully built them. They can build more than one. There are quantum computing companies that license the technology right now. And if you don't think the U.S. government is using that in code breaking or encryption breaking systems, then you're not aware of what's going on. China, in fact, probably has the world's most powerful quantum computers, and Russia is involved in the research, and so is the United States, the NIST, as I mentioned, but also Google and other corporations. You can go online, you can find corporations that have quantum computers that they will license to you if you have sufficient funds to cover the cost. It's a very large cost at the moment. So in essence, what I'm saying is, don't ever think that just because something doesn't make sense that it's not possible. Now, on the flip side, it doesn't mean that every crazy idea is always true. Of course not. Of course not. And we have to exercise discernment. But there are enough seemingly impossible things that are actually true in the universe that we can't discount something just because it seems impossible. And you talk about cold fusion. Again, solid state, room temperature. We're creating excess heat by this very tiny conversion of mass to heat. That seems impossible. Does that mean it's impossible? Not at all. Not at all. Because the universe is far stranger than we can ever imagine. We are barely unlocking the secrets of matter and energy and light and electrons and probability clouds and M theory and string theory and everything else. We're barely unlocking. We just barely scratched the surface. Trust me, there are more mysteries yet to come. And to all those who doubt cold fusion, I would say, prepare to be amazed, because this is coming out. It's already proven. Now humans are just trying to figure out how to explain it. So think about that, folks. Think about it. Fascinating world, fascinating cosmos in which we exist. And we're all part of it. You know, we're sharing atoms with the world around us constantly. Just statistically speaking, there are atoms in your body right now of, let's say, hydrogen and no doubt carbon as well, that were once in the body of Christ. Literally. You share atoms with almost every living person who was on planet Earth, let's say, several millennia ago. The matter that once made them is now part of your physical body. That's not a crazy idea. That's a scientific fact. So keep your minds open, folks, because reality is far more exciting and adventurous and amazing than any of us could possibly imagine. We live in a little tiny subset of reality. And to think that that is all there is, it's very pessimistic, I would say. There's a lot more out there. And in time, we shall discover more, and perhaps that's part of our mission, is to simply learn. Learn more of what's out there. So thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. My website is naturalnews.com, and my platform for podcasts and videos and interviews and things like that is brighteon.com. That's B-R-I-G-H-T-E-O-N, brighteon.com. Thank you for listening.